Jackson trying to escape and run for it, and he's got it more. Lamar Jackson down the sideline. Will they give it to him? They will. Touchdown, Baltimore.
And with 1:17 left to play on Wild Card Weekend, the Hayes in the Barn.
Oh my God! I wish you guys could. I wish we had a camera in here so you could see what we're doing. We're just a bunch of clowns in here.
How much fun is that?
All right, welcome on back to another edition of the Baltimore Beatdown Podcast. It is Wednesday, November 10th, 2021. My name is Jake Luke. I'm joined on my screen by Spencer Nathaniel Schultz. Hopping back here in the studio. It's been a week. I missed two episodes. That's probably the first time that's happened.
You missed a week in podcast time.
A week in podcast time. Okay, yeah, exactly. So been out of town a little bit. Had a nice little trip down to the Big Easy, Nolens, for a bachelor party, which was a fun time. And back in the saddle, feeling refreshed, ready to go. And after a Ravens victory that was at times heart-stopping watch for me, hung over in the Harrah's Casino in New Orleans in the Caesars Sportsbook.
That place is ridiculous.
Amongst Falcon, like a smattering of Falcons fans that I guess all just traveled down to watch the game in the casino and spend a weekend in New Orleans. Then the fucking game just wouldn't end. I'm in the Uber to the airport watching the overtime period. I'm literally in the security line at MSY Airport watching on my phone as Justin Tucker kicks a game winner over the Minnesota Vikings in overtime. So I offered up plenty of my thoughts on Twitter, but that was my viewing experience, if anyone was curious. So not to say that I'm a hero, but I really had to tough that one out.
Sometimes you got to wear that cape. Well, I've missed you. I had a complete befuddlement for some reason. I think the clock setting back has ruined my life somehow. I have been so out of energy for the last like 3 days. I have my internet go out, my power goes out, Comcast goes out on, I think, Monday night when I was trying to do a recap with Josh Reed of Baltimore Beatdown. He was going to hop on and help out. Had a ton of issues there. Posted it on YouTube. The megaphone that we used to post didn't post, so I gave you guys no recap. I'm batting like maybe zero. I'm like Ryan Flaherty in 2016, 2017 right now. Like I'm just fielding everything I can and swinging and missing. Not getting on base a lot, but we are back.
And mouthing, come at me, motherfucker. I forget what pitcher that was, but that's
always awesome. Always mouthing off.
Yeah.
Love him to death. But yeah, so happy to have you back. I'm happy that we got to have Daniel Oyafusi hop on here with us. The perfect guest. I must say, if there's one perfect guest to have on for this Ravens-Dolphins matchup, it is Dan. He covered the Ravens for the Baltimore Sun for, I believe, the last two seasons. And then in the middle of training camp, gets an amazing opportunity to go be a head writer for the Miami Herald covering the Dolphins. So he's down there in Miami, right by the facility there, and has kind of had to learn on the fly. But he's a great reporter, a great young, enthusiastic, and awesome journalist that has done a great job down there. So he was able to have that duality. So we have him on for an interview and got this quick turnaround. It's dark outside at 6 o'clock now. I feel like I'm living in the Twilight Zone.
Yeah, I mean, to that point, I freaking wake up for work and it's dark out and I'm there for what feels like 12 hours and I leave as it's dark out. It's just true Limp Bizkit. It's just one of those days, seasons. And credit to me, I mentioned that I was hungover on Sunday, but I took it pretty easy on Saturday night and I avoided the 2-day hangover. So I got to give myself some credit for that. It really wasn't that bad. Work today was fine. I had Monday off, thankfully. And, you know, I'm back into the swing of things. Sad boy season is getting going. But, yeah, it's been a whirlwind with the time change and everything like that. It's one of my least favorite things about probably just the world in general. The fact that we do this daylight savings thing, it's just completely unnecessary. At this point, it has been outdated. Arizona has got the right idea. Let's just end it.
Arizona is living in a utopian, futuristic society.
Well, they've got... Yeah, in some ways, yes.
in some ways, yes. In many, many, many ways, no. But other than that, yeah, it's a quick turnaround here. How were the beignets? Did you indulge?
So I did not do a beignet, actually. My brother-in-law actually got his own mix that he brought back, and he's going to make us some, I think, at some point. But, yeah, I just never got around to it for whatever reason. I mainly stuck with seafood. So I did po' boys, did some gator bites, some shrimp bites, and kind of stuff like that.
Crawdads?
Yeah, some crawdads. And, yeah, it was just a good old time. And, you know, it was more about the drink scene, going to Pat O'Brien's, doing the Hurricanes, getting the grenades at, I forget, what are the hand grenades place? I forget what it's called for some reason. There's like four of them within like a block of each other on Bourbon Street. It's insane. The place is just it's a whirlwind to be in. And I'd love to get back at some point. Maybe mix in some touristy shit. But I don't know. It was a good time. Got to go out to the Frenchman. Was staying in an interesting Airbnb that was giving me some like 80s porn producer vibes, like two blocks away from Bourbon Street, which was really nice. Yeah, so it was really cool to see that town, which I sort of have some roots in. So, you know, pretty nice.
Cajun sauce, baby.
Absolutely. How was your weekend? Yeah, how was your weekend otherwise? We have to talk about that.
Went to, I don't know, Friday, I honestly... If you were like, I'll Venmo you $50 if you tell me what you did Friday, I can't remember. I don't know. Saturday, hit a vineyard and also hit a cidery and hung out a little bit. I actually didn't drink that much. I think I had like maybe two or three glasses of wine and then like one cider and then a couple beers. We went back to somebody's house and chit-chatted, watched a little college football, watched the end of the Alabama LSU game, watched both of the fights simultaneously, which was sick. Great, great card, UFC, great card. For Canelo as well. Canelo, I'm a big Canelo guy. Not like a loud Canelo guy, but I just really enjoy watching him fight. He is the opposite of Deontay Wilder and Tyson Fury, different weight classes, but puts on a masterclass technically every time, so I enjoyed that. Sunday, got up bright and early, drove up to listener of the show, my buddy Clay's house. We hitched together and went on down to Lot G and H and talked Palmer Ravens football in Lot G and H for a while. Had a couple cold ones, not too many, and then watched the Ravens go out and in that stadium, watch them start as slow as humanly possible for like the sixth time in eight games, it feels like. Maybe the fifth time, the Raiders game, they didn't start too slow, but not too fast. So, you know, it's just really changed atmosphere-wise with kind of the moaning and groaning of the crowd when they're down 17-3. You don't really hear, you know, there was, and the beat writers were kind of like, the crowd is booing. There was like a one light trickle of boos on a third down. It came in, the Ravens, you know, I think went three and out or like six, you know, got one first down, ended up punting the ball.
Well, it's hard to believe that there would even be that much booing, because if you believe the reports of one certain beat writer, there literally was no one even in the stands.
Amazing, Mike Preston. Amazing. I get that guy some goggles. I don't know what's going on. Get him some binoculars. It was pretty, you know, it wasn't, you know, Ray Lewis's last home game against the Colts. It wasn't that packed, but it was pretty freaking full. And I took a video during a timeout, posted on Twitter, because it was like pretty full. It was as full as it's been. The stadium's always pretty full, especially this year. And there was, you know, some boos came in and Mike Preston eat your heart out. But it kind of just felt like, okay, we'll see what happens. They drive down, score a touchdown at the end of the half. You're like, okay, go out halftime, met up with a couple people, a couple fans, a couple listeners stopped by and came to section 134. You guys can always meet me there at halftime. Any listeners of the show that attend a game, hit me up on Twitter. I'm outside 134. That's just where I'll sit from now on. And if anybody wants to meet up and talk ball for 5 minutes, grab a drink and whatever. I've actually bought some Vikings fans a drink and they were all taller than me. They're all like 6'4 and taller, paler than me. It was the great Aryan race of Midwestern, you know, Vikings fans. They were so nice. I bought them a beer. We had an interesting situation where I had a Stella in my hand and I set it down on top of the beer cart to buy me and the Vikings fan a beer. I was like, let me buy you a beer. I'll say I bought a Vikings fan a beer. So I, you know, get two silver bullets and the guy tells me that I bought the Stella, which was already completely empty and that I can only have one Coors Light when I just paid for two. And it ended up with me and the Vikings fans all just doing the Michael Scott Mexican standoff with each other. It was me and like seven Vikings fans all just finger pointing at each other, finger pistols, like Mexican standoffing. And then I was like, hey man, you know, I'll pay for another one. So I think I paid for three beers and got two. So he would leave me alone. Went back in and then immediately second half kickoff return touchdown. And I thought to myself, that's the first time I thought to myself, uh-oh. I think a lot of people would feel similar. It was really like, uh-oh, they're having a clunker. Like, this is bad. And then Lamar Jackson went to work and the good Lord knows the rest of the story. So it was an interesting day. I come back and was just completely exhausted. Had a huge presentation for my other job yesterday that took an hour. I think I answered like 75 questions in 30 minutes. So your boy is sleepy, seasoned up.
Nice. Well, that is quite a weekend, actually. And the game, I'm really just picturing you and like seven Jason Segels just towering over you, like demanding Coors Light.
It was the Erickson's. It was the Marshall Erickson family. Literally, I was like laughing to myself, and I was like, "Wow, you guys really are what I thought you were."
Yeah, I've gotten to know a guy from Minnesota pretty closely through work, and they are that exact person, all of them.
There's a lot of them into that archetype and
yeah, it's a generalization, but there are elements of that that's correct with almost every single person from that region of the country that I've interacted with, and it's a good thing in a lot of ways.
Really nice. They are really nice people. They're known for it. They pride themselves on it. I would say that to steal from one of our favorite podcasts, PMT, the Firefest of the week for the Ravens was banging the doom defense drum and just watching every Vikings fan bang their fist to it and yell skull over and over while they're absolutely crushing the Ravens in the first half and through the kickoff. That was the absolute valley of the mountain.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember like where my head was at. I don't think I ever fully gave up. I mean, that kick return was pretty freaking bad, to your point. But I don't know, just that drive. And obviously, we got to give a shout out to Pat Ricard for just being the spark plug that we all know him to be before the half there. Also, a shout out to Rashad Bateman for drawing that PI that helped set up a touchdown. So, yeah, just, there were some elements that the offense was coming alive a little bit. The defense, as bad as a start as they got off to, they really started to tighten it up, even just a few drives into the game. And it just felt like, I tweeted something to the effect of like, that was probably the worst half of football they've played this year. And they're down 17-10. Like, it's probably a miracle that they're in this spot. And I was probably at that point thinking, well, maybe a few things break your way in the second half, you can go on and win this thing. And they did, probably not in the way that I would expect. I mean, the overtime was freaking insane. Anthony Barr making that play that pretty much only Anthony Barr could make to
the 6'5", 250-pound, really uber athletic linebacker with crazy long arms. That was definitely nuts.
Yeah, it's like tips a pass to himself, intercepts it, and all of a sudden you're thinking that's a ball game. But to the defense's credit, as much shit as they've gotten this season, and as much shit as they got in that game, three and out, got the ball back to the Ravens, and they drove into position. Some really good strategy, I think, by the coaching staff to leave Le'Veon Bell just on the shelf until they absolutely needed his legs.
And one of your favorite things is fresh running backs.
Yeah, it worked with J.K.
That's
Dobbins.
That's like your Mount Rushmore of favorite things related to football, I think.
It is, yeah. It worked with J.K. Dobbins last year because everyone was freaking out about, oh my God, why aren't they using J.K. Dobbins in these games that they're beating the Bengals 28-0 by? It's like, well, guess what? A little something called the human element here and a little something called fresh legs works a long way for a running back. And it's an underrated thing of, running back investments, I think, that people don't really think about. Everything is so running backs don't matter, X, Y, and Z. To an extent, that's correct. But also there is some strategy to having a deep stable of them, a talented stable of them. This is not the most talented stable, but it's relatively deep. And it's experienced. And I think that showed with Devontae Freeman having a nice game. That showed with Bell coming in late and doing what he did, and I was impressed.
Yeah, to do like a half-assed kind of analogy, it's like they bought three used cars at running back, kind of, that are still kind of nice used cars. They have a lot of miles on them, but you need running backs. Are you going to continue to want to go further? You're going to want to, buy a luxury 7 Series BMW that's a 2007 with 100,000 miles on it that's in good shape for now, and as soon as you get it, you just want to rip it up and down 95, taking road trips every single weekend to go visit your buds? No, you're going to want to let them, sit in the garage a little bit, let them, slowly drive them out, make sure they're rolling, make sure the air pressure's good, everything's good, and then you can start to really, enjoy the drive there. So I think they've done a good job mixing up the backs. Devontae Freeman, holy crap, has looked really sharp, really, really, really sharp. Good jump cuts, all that stuff. So exciting to see them able to continue to make lemonade out of dog shit, so to speak, and be able to make this backfield pretty relevant. People don't realize, Lamar ran for 120. Those backs ran for like 100 and I think 30 or 40 as well. So they ran for over 200 yards and had 20 something carries, and they were mixing them all up. So I think that's been an interesting development. But
I think my favorite, I think my, sorry to cut you off. I think my favorite development of the year is Like when it's like late in the third quarter and all of a sudden somebody like Jeff or somebody tweets and Lamar Jackson just crossed like the 90-yard rushing stat 10 more yards ago until he has 100. And it's like, wait, what? Like when did, how is this happening? Like it doesn't feel like he's running all that much, but apparently he is.
A lot of scrambles. Haven't finished going back all through the game. Don't need to harp on it a ton. We are going to get to the Dolphins here too, but just early in the game as I've been going back through, and I get it. He has every reason not to trust his offensive line and they do let up some pressures, but left like four clean pockets for no reason. And Eric Kendricks and Anthony Barr were just their primary focus as like the twin tower linebackers that are like 6'3 and 6'5 and athletic with length was like, let's take away the inside of Mark Andrews and someone sit for Lamar Jackson. And they did exactly that. And Lamar Jackson kind of, I think everyone's looking at it. I've seen some stuff floating on Twitter where it's like, of course, Lamar is carrying the Ravens offense. Absolutely. He is, you know, producing 84% of their yards or whatever to this point, but he was scrambling a lot. He had 20 something carries and everyone's like, wow, he threw the ball 40 times and had 20 something carries. I was like, yeah, he scrambled like 10 times. So that was kind of on his own prerogative a little bit, but as the game wore on, he just continues to be so good in the second half. And whenever they get into those positions where gotta have it, they get it like every time, except against the Bengals so far this year. So it's been a fun ride to watch, but let's flip the switch. And I guess before we get to the interview with Dan, we can talk a little Dolphins. Not like we had a ton of time to think about them or anything. Full disclosure, I did crisscross Jake a little bit in my Ryan Flaherty batting 087 for the week here. And he thought we were recording tomorrow, we're recording tonight. So we don't have a ton, and it's also a quick turnaround. So let's talk a little South Florida Dolphins.
Yeah, no, it was fine because we had a good friend of the show on who we're both pretty comfortable with. So we were able to kind of just turn it into a casual discussion, but also a pretty good in-depth preview. So just fine there. And it is indeed a quick turnaround. And it's a turnaround to a very bad team at 2-7 with the Miami Football Dolphins. I guess probably the biggest story going into this game is the fact that we don't know who is going to be starting at quarterback. Signs seem to be pointing to Jacoby Brissett, who has played at times this season. It sounds like the Ravens are preparing for both guys. They both kind of bring something different. Jacoby can move around a little bit, but you see him much more as the kind of statuesque pocket passer. Tua is a little bit more of an improviser, got a quicker release, I think, and is probably just a little bit more talented, or maybe a lot bit more talented, but you know, it's not like his play has necessarily shown that to be the case at all times this season. So it's kind of a crapshoot in my opinion. But if I were the Ravens, I would probably be preparing more for Brissett, but we'll see what they do.
Yeah, for sure. He hasn't practiced. I don't think – it just doesn't feel like there's a huge motivation to play Tua. And I was thinking about that a lot, and Dan completely schooled me because I completely forgot. The Dolphins traded their first-round pick for next year, but they still hold the 49ers pick, which is like basically like a lottery pick at this point. So I was thinking to myself, you know, you can't really tank because – you don't have your own pick. So it's like, I don't know. With Deshaun Watson rumors and all that speculation, they're just in a weird spot. I just have trouble seeing what you gain out of playing Tua right now. You pretty distinctly are out of the playoffs unless you make an all-time great run with an injured team that has a really young offensive line. So I'm not sure. There's a lot of factors into this game, and that Thursday night quick turnaround is definitely one of them. People definitely were going to want to point to the fact that the Ravens have kind of big brothered the Dolphins the last three times they played. I think they've won by at least 30 points each of the last three times they played with Lamar and Hollywood and a couple South Florida boys there. But I don't know. Dan alluded to the fact he thought this game could kind of surprise people. He looked to the Vegas line a little bit. I think with Ogba and some of that defensive front, they can make some noise and bring a little pain. I can see like a Dolphins ending a drive or like ending two straight drives, and like Christian Wilkins is like pointing at the ground. He's like, this is our shit. And then the Ravens take over again. I don't think a slow start would surprise anyone considering the Ravens are averaging less than 3 points per first quarter. But the Ravens also had their bye week last week, and John Harbaugh alluded to the fact that they were looking at the Vikings and the Dolphins, whereas the Dolphins are really banged up. They're missing a ton of talent offensively. Their defense, you know, is played okay at times, but is also kind of worn down and hasn't. Daniel mentions the fact that, you know, there's variance and turnovers and all those things. So the Ravens might be able to have a really positive game script. They feels like they have had more ample time to look at this Dolphins team probably than the Dolphins had time to look at the Ravens. So I don't know. My heart tells me I feel like this is going to be a game where it's close for a while. Everyone's like, what's going on? It's a Thursday night slop fest for a little, and then the Ravens kind of pull it out towards the middle and end part of the game and make the box score look respectable, but it was tougher than they thought. or it's a shit show for the Dolphins. I don't know. I really don't know. It's a very interesting game, especially with Elliott out. The Ravens offensive line is not great. The Dolphins offensive line is good. So weird mix of factors here, to say the least.
Yeah, I think I tweeted yesterday when the quarterback report came out that this really wouldn't shock me if it was a little bit closer than people are expecting, with the short turnaround, with the fact that the Ravens played about as long of a game as you can play without tying this past week, and an emotionally draining game at that, and a physically draining game at that, losing to Sean Elliott in the secondary. There's just a lot of factors to consider, to your point. And it does just kind of have that feeling of Dolphins are at home. You know, a lot of these players are probably pissed off. Brian Flores is kind of a hard ass. He's probably not letting up on his players, and they're probably going to want to at least try and have some pride early on in this game. So to your point, I can see like Christian Wilkins or like whoever making some play and then like doing some, you know, crazy dance or something and get people fired up, and Ravens Twitter just getting fucking apoplectic, just as they were against the Vikings, and it just being really stressful for a little while. And then the Ravens eventually pulled away. That's kind of what I'm expecting here.
Yeah, I think those are the two realms of possibilities, you know, any given Sunday or Thursday or Friday or Monday or whatever. But I don't know. I'm a little bit torn to see. I'm sure there's a lot of factors that have like more of a narrative to them. Like Lamar is from South Florida. The Ravens beat the crap out of them last time. All these things. But to your point, that offense definitely has to be feeling it a little bit. You know, quick turnaround. We'll see if Sammy Watkins can play. I feel like he is ready to go. And it feels like the Ravens just elected to rest Jimmy Smith, who I think played one defensive snap, but four special team snaps or something strange of the sort. So a couple guys there that could come in, be a little bit more fresh, so to speak, and make a contribution and help out a little bit. But I guess we'll do some predictions. And as is tradition, you can start us off.
Yeah, I'm going to go. We go Dolphins, probably score an early touchdown or two. They start to feel themselves a little bit, but then the wheels just kind of fall off. I'm going to go Ravens 31, Dolphins 19.
I do think this is going to be an Odafe Owe and Justin Houston game. I think that those guys can make an impact against that offensive line. Odafe Owe is young. They just had the bye week. I foresee a big play happening there. I think the Ravens can also make some noise on special teams. So I think that this game kind of looks like a clunker, gets the eyes on Twitter starting to go. And the national media is going, what's going on here? Ravens start slow. Dolphins look like a blah, blah, blah. And then I think the Ravens end up ultimately scoring like three or four touchdowns and kind of looking maybe a little bit similar to that Bills game the Dolphins played 2 weeks ago, where it was close for a good bit. And then the Bills just outclassed them in the second half and got super serious and were able to take care of business. The Ravens did run, I think, 89 plays, either 89 or 98 offensive plays on Sunday. So that offense has to be a little tired. I would like to see Lamar not be running or asked to run a ton, especially if you can kind of get some other things going. I'd like to see the receivers, Mark Andrews and the backs, take a little bit more of the workload in this game and see if you can manage that way. And then if Lamar needs to elevate in the second half, he will always be able to do that. So I'm going to go Ravens 29, Dolphins 15.
Couple weird scores for the boys this week.
Weird scores for the boys. Weird week for the boys. Quick turnaround. And glad to have you back. Glad to have you back. I am going to be in Miami for the Dolphins game, and we'll see what we can finagle. I might be able to record on Friday morning or something of the sort. I think.
Are you staying down there all weekend?
I am staying down there all weekend, but I'm staying at a friend's place. Like, I'm not partying all weekend and stuff. I'm going to the beach and hanging out. So
okay.
Well, we should be able to coordinate, hopefully, and keep the boys in the studio. Let the boys play.
Cool. Yeah, it was definitely good to get a week or so off and kind of get a little refreshed. A bye week of my own of sorts. And it'll be nice for you to get down there, get some warm weather and some vitamin D in a time where I can tell you really need it.
I certainly do. Certainly do. Pale boy season is upon us. I need a little color on my face and hoping to eat up that Miami sun. But without further ado, I guess you can get us out of here, buddy.
Yep. So we will talk to you guys again on Thursday night, probably with a little recap show, or Friday morning, depending on whether we go live or not, whatever. You know exactly what I'm saying. But yeah, there you have it with our predictions. And in the meantime, we're going to throw it over now to our interview with Daniel Oyefusi of the Miami Herald, formerly of the Baltimore Sun. He did a great job covering the Ravens here for a couple years. He's a friend of the show. He's been on the airwaves before in his capacity as a Ravens beat reporter. So, of course, we reached out to him to give us some expertise on the Dolphins. He's been down there in South Beach or South Beach adjacent for a couple months now, and he's been deeply embedded with the team and kind of getting all the knowledge and insight that you'd need to get some expert opinions for this upcoming game. So that's one that you're definitely going to want to stay tuned for. So without further ado, let's throw it over to that.
See ya.
Arrivederci.
I can't guarantee that anybody in the world will be alive Sunday.
All right. We now welcome on a very special guest. It is a friend of the show, a top five follow on both Wizards and Dolphins Twitter. It's Daniel Oyafusi, who is making his return to the pod after a long, long time in between. It might have been over a year at this point. I think I want to say you and I did a show probably after the 2019 season at one point, but it's been a while. How's it been going, bud? You got your new gig going on down there in Miami. How have things been for you?
It's been well. It's going really well. You know, I hit the ground running, coming in the middle of training camp. You know, I had to, you know, make new connections. I kind of learn a new team on the fly, but, you know, I'm really getting to a groove and I'm enjoying it.
Yeah.
So let's get the first and most important question out of the way. How about them Wiz kids, huh? Took down the champs the other night. How you feeling on Mr. Spencer Dinwiddie and that Wizards crew?
I'm feeling good. You know, I was telling somebody, Tommy Shepard might need to get executive of the year just for, like, finding a way to trade away Russell Westbrook. You know, I like Russ, wish him the best, but, you know, that's really probably the best move of the NBA offseason, just finding a way to get some depth. And they're looking good. You know, they're playing like a real team, like a well-coached team, and it's a deep team. You know, you haven't really heard that a lot with the Wizards, so I'm excited. I'm definitely going to have to hit up a game when I go back home.
Yeah, they definitely are, and Terps are actually looking good right now, too. I know you got some loyalties to Terps basketball as well, so your basketball is just in a great spot right now. Your football is in an interesting spot because you obviously, we talked a little bit about you covering the Ravens for the Sun. You did a great job there. You and Jonas kind of forming a real nice tag team. And then as you sort of alluded to, I think before we got going here, this past offseason, you know, you had been covering the Ravens for the Sun and then you end up getting the job with the Miami Herald. How'd all that go down? What's the transition been like? And what is kind of the difference between the two jobs been for you so far?
Yeah, so I just want to say I really had a great, just great experience at the Baltimore Sun. You know, just talking to Jonas, he's going to be in town for the game. And, you know, I had a great relationship with him, great relationship with all my coworkers, which is kind of a cool, unique opportunity to kind of spread my wings and kind of take a leap of faith. You know, I was born and raised in Maryland, so all I know. So to kind of come down here with the new opportunity and kind of be like, be the lead writer, it was just the opportunity I couldn't pass up. And it's been fun, you know. I've never really cared much about the Dolphins, never really followed the Dolphins outside of maybe if they played the Ravens. So it's been cool kind of learning about the franchise, learning its history, interacting with fans and kind of learning, you know, about the fan base and whatnot. And I'm really enjoying it. You know, I'm really, really trying to use my ability and with the team to kind of cover it from all different angles, kind of like Jonas and I did back in Baltimore. So it's been fun.
Love that, and that certainly is a huge move going down to the warm weather season. No sad boy season, no seasonal depression. Love to see it. So you're talking about, you know, just getting set up. The Ravens obviously have a very kind of – they're a new team, but they have like of a historic vibe around the facility. It's like modern, but it has this rooted in Baltimore feeling. It's, you know, out in the woods kind of off the beaten path a little bit. And now you're going down to Miami that has a very storied franchise of its own, has its own personality – in one of the most exciting places in this country, if not the world. So what has stuck out to you about the Dolphins facilities or organization, franchise, history, all of those good things in the short time that you've been down there? Obviously it was, you know, what, August was 3 months ago. So you've been there like 2.5 months, but what has stuck out to you so far?
You know, yeah, like you said, I mean, it is a storied franchise. You know, you hear about like the 72 Dolphins. That's probably like all I knew, you know, that Shula, Marino, like I said, outside of when they played the Ravens, I didn't really know too much. So, you know, I even got a book that a former Miami Herald columnist wrote just about literally the history of the Dolphins. I mean, he was covering them for about 35, 40 years. And I've just been reading that just to kind of learn about the team. It is, I, in terms of the beat, I do kind of get like a laid back, casual vibe, and I think it kind of fits the Miami vibe. So I've been getting used to that. But you also do see, like, I notice a lot of guys dress up more in the press box because they're trying to, you know, it's Miami, so you got to kind of show out. So it's been fun. You know, when you kind of go to NFL Beats, all of it is kind of, it's similar in the sense of, you know, the schedule and whatnot. But every team kind of runs stuff differently. And, you know, in Miami, you know, it's a franchise that hasn't really had the success of the Ravens in, you know, the past 20 years. You know, the Ravens have, you know, been around. The Dolphins haven't really had a lot of success. But, you know, they're, you know, they've invested a lot in terms of the new practice facility that they just opened up. It's right across from the stadium. And, you know, there's definitely a lot of excitement in this fan base and kind of longing for them to turn things around. It hasn't happened this season, but there's definitely a real passionate fan base down here.
Yeah, it's interesting that you would describe them that way. I think passionate is probably something that I could definitely see them being. They haven't seen a ton of success recently, which is kind of a tough dynamic. And you mentioned sort of that chill vibe, which sounds like something that I could kind of go for. As you well know, this fan base and this area can get a little too crazy at times for football. And having actually just been in New Orleans for a Saints game day this past Sunday, you know, it's interesting the sort of different dynamics that you can see in some of the fan bases across the league. But kind of getting to know the fan base down there in Miami, you would just kind of describe them as sort of chill and laid back, but sort of passionate. That seems like a pretty interesting dynamic to me.
Yeah, especially when it comes to Tua, you know, it's funny, I will say this. The Dolphins fans who support Tua are like, they're steadfast. I mean, in terms of the way that the Ravens fans support Lamar, I mean, it's neck and neck. They ride for that guy. But they're also kind of a divided bunch because there's a big segment or a portion of that population, that Dolphins fan base, that, you know, they're kind of ready to move off to even not even 2 years into his career. So again, they're really passionate, you know, whether it's supporting the team, whether it's winning Tua to be the franchise quarterback or not. I mean, they're very passionate, and, you know, I've appreciated that. And, you know, it's been cool to interact with them and kind of get their opinion and thoughts on not only where the team is this year, but kind of the past 20, 25 years of that franchise. Because, you know, a lot of these people have lived through, like, just no playoff game. I don't think the Dolphins have won a playoff game in two decades. And there's a lot of, like, you know, 25, 28-year-old people who, like, they don't know what a real winning franchise is. So it is kind of interesting to get their perspective on things.
And obviously you're brand new there. You're fresh. You didn't get the full off season to kind of digest everything. You're learning on the fly and all that stuff. But this Dolphins team is one that last year rattles off 4 out of 6 games. They win. They end up 10-6 there. They ultimately lose to the Bills 56-26, a disappointing end to the season. And it really felt like there was just a general buzz around the NFL. And I'm sure within that Miami fan base and around that organization, feeling like they were going to come in and get off to a strong start here and be a real competitor in the Brian Flores era. And how do you see that they've kind of hit some adversity or some struggles this season and been trying to mitigate loss? Obviously Tua, you mentioned, has been banged up and season just hasn't really gone their way so far. So getting into the nuts and bolts of it, what have you seen and where do you see this Dolphins team standing currently and moving forward a little bit generally?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's kind of like I guess the best way to put it is it's like a top to bottom kind of failure. You know, when you look at, you know, the general manager, Chris Greer, he's been there since 2016, but he's been in that role since 2016, but he's also been with the organization for a lot longer. So he's kind of the guy calling the shots, and him and Flores kind of work together on those personnel moves. But, you know, there's been some draft misses. There's been young guys who haven't really progressed the way that they would have hoped to. They've had a lot of injuries. And, you know, really with the offense side with Tua, I mean, they kind of remade this offense and rebuilt this offense with Tua in mind and kind of wanting to give him the best possible infrastructure possible. And he's been given anything but that. You know, they've drafted a lot of guys on the offensive line and early, especially, you know, first, second, third round, fourth round. They haven't developed the way you would have expected. They haven't really invested much in the running back position, and then at wide receiver, I mean, guys are just hurt, you know, whether that's Will Fuller or Devontae Parker or Preston Williams. And with that, they haven't really been able to evaluate Tua. And now he's hurt. So you really can't evaluate him at all because he's not on the field. And then on the defense, which was kind of like their bread and butter, you know, that's the one thing they could rely on last year. We've seen a little bit of regression, you know. Prior to last Sunday's win over the Texans, they weren't really turning the ball over at the rate that they were in 2020. They haven't really been good in situational football, whether that's red zone or third down. And, you know, their best players just frankly haven't been playing like their best players. You know, they invested a lot of money in that secondary and Xavier Howard and Byron Jones. Xavier Howard, you know, led the league in interceptions last season. He's not doing that this year. He's not covering as well as he was before. And, you know, they've had a lot of turnover. You know, they got rid of some veteran guys like Bobby McCain and Kyle Van Noy, and they're inserting some younger guys. And I think there were some growing pains early on, but they're kind of starting to settle into their respective roles. And I think on Thursday night, we're going to see if, you know, that defense really is starting to turn the corner.
Yeah, and I think you hit on some interesting stuff there, and I think the Tua situation is one that is especially interesting, and it now feels like we're kind of on the other side of something with Tua now, where I don't know where his head is at, because for a 2-7 football team, the Dolphins have weirdly been in the headlines seemingly every week this season, and the elephant in the room, obviously, is the Deshaun Watson situation. What was it like covering that from your perspective? What do you think Stephen Ross's head was at? Where do you think Tua's head is at right now? It's such a complicated, weird topic for so many different reasons, but I'm just curious from your perspective what all that's been like.
Yeah, it was really unique and really like nothing I've really covered outside of maybe like the Ravens coronavirus outbreak, where you're just kind of on the clock, you know, day to day to see what's going on. I mean, it was like there was a new report every single week, every single day, especially once you got close to the trade deadline. And I think it was a really unique situation for, you know, the franchise as a whole, because, you know, it was kind of evident that they were and still are interested in trading for Deshaun Watson. But he also obviously has kind of like the allegations hanging over his head right now, and part of the reason why he hasn't played this season. So just kind of, you know, it's like we've been asking Brian Flores since like last preseason game, you know, what is going on? And he's kind of the mindset of the ship that, you know, I'm not gonna comment on any of this stuff, whether it's right, whether it's wrong. So you just kind of have this hanging over the franchise for literally the first half of the season. You're asking Tua about it. And as much as Tua would like to say, oh, it doesn't bother me, I don't hear it, I mean, he eventually admitted, hey, I hear it. And you can tell that it was really affecting him. Covering it personally was just, like I said, just really unique. I mean, it got to the point where we finally got the general manager, Chris Greer, to speak to us the day after the trade deadline passed. And he, without saying Watson's name, he pretty much said, yeah, we did our due diligence and looked into the availability. So for a franchise to kind of be so, I won't say forthcoming, but to not even hide the fact that they're interested in this guy while you have a young quarterback that you're trying to develop. And I mean, I really haven't seen anything like that in the NFL, and it's over for now, but I mean, I'm very confident that this is going to be revisited during the offseason.
The Dolphins are in a tough place because they don't have a first round pick next year. That greatly reduces, you know, their ability to make some of these power moves right now. They end up trading up to get Jaylen Waddle, which I think he's a hell of a player. I think, you know, people are too early to maybe jump and say, oh, you look at Ja'Marr Chase, look at Devontae Smith, when both of those guys are really good, and maybe trading up and doing all that was a little bit of a mistake. But ultimately, the book's not done yet on Jaylen Waddle. What have you seen out of these young playmakers offensively? You mentioned the young offensive line, and does it just kind of feel like they're really lacking a veteran presence in terms of on the field production and some of the guys they've had over the last couple of years? And at this point, Tua has been banged up. Devontae Parker, Will Fuller, you mentioned all those guys. So what have you seen? It's a really youthful group. And what have you seen from that group offensively overall?
Yeah. Well, one thing I want to point out is that the Dolphins do have a first round pick in the 2022 draft. It's just right. That it's the 49ers pick, and they traded away their own pick to move up and get Jaylen Waddle. So the Eagles have that pick right now, which is like a top three pick. You know, there was a lot of noise about that, but right now it's looking like the 49ers pick might be top 10 anyway. But that just to set that point aside.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, as far as the wide receiver group and the pass catcher group is, I mean, when they got rid of Chan Gailey and hired George Godsey and Eric Stutzfeld to kind of be co-offensive coordinators and work together, and then they hired Charlie Fry to be the quarterback's coach, you know, in the offseason they spoke about wanting to stretch defenses vertically, you know. it wasn't a real explosive offense, which is why they drafted Jalen Waddle, which is why they signed Will Fuller, who's only played like two games or one and one quarter of a game because of injury. And then, you know, in Devontae Parker and Preston Williams, I mean, you do have some guys who have a little bit of experience. So there was that hope early on in training camp and OTAs that, yeah, I mean, this is a veteran group. It's a group that can do different things in terms of, you know, they have speed guys, you have big catch radius guys, you have guys that can work over the middle and whatnot. But again, because of the injuries, I mean, you just haven't seen that come to fruition. I mean, I don't think that the trio of Devontae Parker, Will Fuller, and Jalen Waddle have played in a game this season because whether it's because of injury or whatever, I mean, they've yet to play together. And it's like, that's not what the Dolphins, really expected or wanted coming into the season. So now, you know, on Thursday night, you really look at the only two main guys that you think that the Ravens really have to account for are Jalen Waddle, who's an explosive receiver, but they haven't utilized him like that. I mean, he has one of the lowest average depths of target in the NFL, partly because, I mean, this offensive line can't block and sustain their blocks in, you know, long enough to attempt those downfield attempts. And then you have Mike Gesicki, who's one of the better tight ends in the NFL. He's really good over the middle, really good at kind of similar to Mark Andrews and his ability to find the crevices and zone coverage and whatnot. But, you know, that's those two guys alone aren't going to get it done. I mean, this offense would be a lot better if Will Fuller was healthy, if Devontae Parker was healthy, but that just hasn't been the case. And again, when you have that many guys missing and the offensive line that has struggled as much as the Dolphins' line has, it's tough to do anything on offense.
Yeah, and it's one that I would assume has looked different at different times due to the fact that Tua has missed time, as we've alluded to, and it's not known as of yet who is going to be starting and even playing in this one with Jacoby Brissett as the backup. Tua's dealing with an injury. There's no clarity there as to who's going to start, at least that I've seen so far. It sounds like the Ravens are preparing for both guys. What is kind of the difference between the offenses when these guys are kind of individually at the controls, in your expert opinion?
I mean, I would say the main difference is really the use of the RPOs. You know, that was kind of like a staple of this new offense that they incorporated. You know, Tua had a lot of experience with that in Alabama. So, yeah, you will see more RPOs, more play action fakes. But really, the offense, in terms of maybe the scheme, it doesn't change too much. And again, with Tua and Jacoby, and it doesn't matter which quarterback. I mean, they're actually both averaging 7 point yards, you know, of yards per attempt in terms of the average depth. So it's not an offense that's really trying. I mean, the intention was to test teams vertically, but they just haven't been able to do it. And, you know, if you look at, you know, Jalen Waddle's route sheet, I mean, he's not running a lot of deep routes. I mean, it's a lot of screens, it's a lot of slants, it's a lot of hitches. I think that the Texans game last week, they actually did a better job of not throwing him short of the sticks every single time. You know, you saw him, catch the ball, you know, pass the sticks and whatnot. But yeah, it's a really limited offense, in terms of the offensive line and the injuries at pass catcher.
Knowing what you know about this Ravens team, obviously covering them the last couple of years and paying attention to them overall, while you haven't had a ton of time this year, but same defensive coordinator, a lot of the same faces. How do you see this matchup going with whoever it is, Jacoby Brissett, Tua? For me, it feels like probably Jacoby at this point, but how do you feel like they're going to match up overall? And where do you think the storyline lies at the end of the game for that side of the ball?
Yeah, it's an interesting question because, in years past, we've known Wink Martindale to be like blitz happy, you know, 50% blitzing throughout the season, and that's kind of dropped down a bit. I think probably it's maybe due to the fact that they've lost Marcus Peters, they lost Deshaun Elliott, so they're not able to kind of rely on that secondary like we've seen them accustomed to. So I am kind of curious to see what the mindset is. We know that they are facing a bad offensive line. This is an offensive line that, you know, the Ravens probably can apply pressure with four. But it kind of reminds me of the Ravens Washington football team game, if you guys remember that 2020 game where they're facing Dwayne Haskins, and instead of applying a lot of pressure, they actually didn't blitz as much as you would have expected, and they kind of showed blitz looks before the snap, and then they kind of dropped back into zones and forced or kind of led the Washington football team to throw those quick passes and just gain
they wanted Dwayne Haskins to put the ball in the air.
Yeah, and then they just didn't. I mean, they got the ball out of his hand really quickly, and we know that with whether Shakobbi or Tua, they're going to do that as well. So again, you know, I know that the Ravens defense, I know in recent games, they let up some big explosive plays through the air against, you know, Justin Jefferson, Jamar Chase. But I have a hard time, you know, thinking or believing that, you know, the Dolphins are going to be able to do that, even with some of the injuries to the Ravens defense.
Definitely. And I guess on that note, we can switch over to the Dolphins defense. And looking at the lineup, it doesn't look like a ton of names. There is kind of one name that Ravens fans will obviously be familiar with because he was in the news in regards to the Ravens the other day. And that would be Xavien Howard, with the news coming out that the Ravens were discussing potentially trading for him. So I'm interested to see, like, is he kind of the one name that you would look to as sort of the leader or the defining player on this defense? Are there any other names that jump out to you that you would have Ravens fans kind of key in on?
Yeah, I mean, he is definitely like the household name of that group. But I'm really interested in seeing how that defensive line does against the Ravens' offensive line. You know, whether it's a guy like Emmanuel Agba, who's leading the team in 5 sacks. I mean, I think that he's had a really strong season, not only just like sacking the quarterback, but applying pressures, getting batted balls. I think that he can have a strong game against Tyree Phillips. He's probably going to start again at right tackle for Patrick McCarthy. You know, on the inside, you have a guy like Christian Wilkins, who's in his third season out at Clemson. He's starting to put it together. We're starting to see more from him as a pass rusher. And, you know, you guys know, we know that in some of Lamar's, you know, not so good games in years past, you know, the interior line has been able to really affect him. I remember like the Bills game of last year, the Titans game of 2019 season, they were able to get a lot of pressure inside. So I think that, you know, if this game is going to be won, or, you know, if it's going to be close, at least the Dolphins defensive front is going to really have to, you know, make its presence known. And I think that, you know, I wouldn't say that there's like a major advantage, but I think that he could win some battles throughout that game.
Definitely. And just looking at this front, it feels like it's so talented. It is pretty young. Agba, obviously the headliner there. Christian Wilkins, you mentioned. Zach Sealer, a former Raven who's been outstanding against the run. He gets an extension. Yep. Also have the first round pick, Jalen Phillips. Raekwon Davis, who from what I've understood has had a kind of disappointing year, but they've definitely got some dogs up front. I also like to compare the Ravens, actually the Patriots and the Dolphins defenses a little bit. Dolphins, according to PFF, have, I think, 11 guys that have at least 8 pressures and a couple DBs, a couple linebackers in there. They like to blitz a little bit, get some different blitz packages. So how is this unit? I haven't had a ton of time to watch this unit. How have they been underperforming? Because it feels like they do have talent, especially with those two corners on the outside. They've got guys like Javon Holland, who's in the conversation for Rookie of the Year, someone that has, you know, really versatile skill set. They also have McCourty on the back end there, who's a veteran. Obviously, everybody's familiar with him. So what has been leading to this unit underperforming? Is it the offense's performance kind of hindering them, or what have you seen?
Yeah, I mean, it's really like, I mean, there's a lot of things you can look at with this Dolphins team and just like wonder like what happened. But really, there's been the regression of the defense that's been the most surprising to me. And I think that, again, what I alluded to earlier, they had excelled so much in like situational football. You know, they were great in the red zone. I think they were the top ranked third down unit last year. So they were getting off the field.
Tons of turnovers too.
Exactly. You know, they led the league in takeaways last season, and just none of that has really, you know, carried over into you know, the season. And you know defense variance is a little more iffy. You know, you can't necessarily count on the same level of defensive play the way you can count on the same level of offensive play from year to year. But again, I think that they're starting to settle to those roles. You know, they were actually rotating their safeties, which was really weird. You know, last year they had Bobby McCain and Eric Rowe, who were just like, you know, linchpin starters. And, you know, the first month of the season, they're rotating Rowe, Javon Holland, Jason McCourty, who's now on IR, Brandon Jones. So like I said, I think they're really starting to settle into those roles. Javon Holland, he's really like their free safety. You'll see him in a lot of those single high looks. They'll play Brandon Jones closer to the line of scrimmage. And, you know, they're not blitzing as much as they used to last year. But, I mean, they'll say that that's because, you know, offenses have kind of gotten used to that. But I think it's really about winning on the early downs where they can kind of get offenses in that those positions where they can, you know, show those exotic looks and kind of that quote-unquote amoeba defense and give different looks. So they're starting to get back to that. They're starting to do better against the run, which they weren't very good against in the first months of the season. And again, it's starting to come together. We take the Texans game with a grain of salt. And, you know, you really look at the Ravens game as the real definitive test for this defense.
Yeah, and the Ravens are an interesting offense in that, even including last week and in a lot of games this year, they've gotten off to some really kind of slow starts. And with a guy with the unique perspective of yours being very familiar with both teams, what do you think the Ravens offense is going to have to do against this defense to get off to a hot start and get a positive game script going for the first time in kind of a while, honestly?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, I think that, you know, from what I've read, it seems like the Ravens have been throwing a lot more. They're kind of emphasizing, you know, play action pass, passing on early downs. And really, you know, if you're going to do that, you're going to have to protect Lamar. You know, guys like Agbor, Christian Wilkins, maybe Jalen Phillips. I mean, those are guys who can, you know, pressure the quarterback from time to time. But, you know, depending on how the Dolphins really decide to defend Lamar, you know, are they going to sit back in zones? Are they going to play more man? Are they going to try to blitz some more? Depending on that, you know, or regardless of that, I think that it's going to be dependent on the defensive front to get pressure. So if the offensive line can do their job, pick up their blocks, I mean, I have a hard time seeing the Dolphins linebackers, you know, matching up well with Mark Andrews, you know, whether it's Jerome Baker or Sam McGuavin or Landon Roberts. I mean, those are real, like pass rushers, situational pass rusher guys. They're not really great in coverage. Obviously, you have the booking cornerbacks and Jones and Howard, and they've been beat at times as well. But from what I'm seeing from Marquise Brown, I mean, he seems like he's just on another level right now in terms of his route running, in terms of his explosiveness. He looks healthy. He's playing the best football of his young career right now. So, you know, the Ravens are going to have to do a lot to kind of mess things up and kind of put themselves in a position where they might lose this game.
For sure. And kind of just looking through DVOA, which Jake and I love, I feel like you and Jonas have always been heavy on DVOA too. Dolphins are terrible in special teams, DVOA-wise. I haven't had a ton of time to really examine why. What's going on with the special teams unit? I'm going to assume it's been pretty laughably bad by how you're starting to answer this question. And what do you see a short week against a Ravens team that loves to try and dial some things up looking like?
Yeah, it's just like that overall regression. You know, Jason Sanders, who, you know, last year I think he was an All-Pro selection, considered one of the best kickers in the NFL. He's missed a couple kicks. They got rid of their, you know, incumbent punter last year. They brought in Matt Pilardi, and he has just not been good. He shanked a couple kicks. They haven't got much in the return game. They traded away Jakeem Grant. They're using Jalen Waddle on kick returns, but he hasn't really gotten too many opportunities. Javon Holland is their punt returner, and, you know, he's nice fielding. I mean, he's not the most explosive guy, but he can field the punts, but he also fumbled in the win over the Texans. So it's just like I said, it's just the overall regression. I mean, it's really dumbfounding. Like every aspect of the team has gotten worse. And, you know, it's not like they had a massive turnover in terms of the roster. But again, yeah, I mean, special teams is just another area of the team that hasn't really played up to the standard of last year.
Yeah, definitely. And that's got to be something that's maybe a little bit harder to kind of break down and keep up with as a beat reporter. Is that something that, like, you kind of, and this is me just kind of curious, like, in the process of your job, is that something where you're kind of keeping tabs on, like, the near the end of the roster guys and, like, what they're doing on special teams? Because I think that's kind of a little bit of a cool beat to be on.
Oh, yeah. I mean, especially with, you know, with a lot of, like, the practice squad elevations and whatnot, I mean, I'm always keeping tabs of that. I'm curious, you know, what types of guys they're trying to bring up, why they're bringing up certain guys. I'm asking, like, why'd you bring up this guy, or why is this guy getting special team snaps over that guy? So, yeah, I mean, it's just kind of part of the beat to be on top of that. I mean, I know even in previewing this game, I'm already kind of looking at the practice squad elevations and knowing who they can't bring up anymore and how that might impact the end of the roster, you know, game day inactives and whatnot. So, I mean, it's life on the beat and life as a beat reporter.
Speaking of which, what are the main stories right now? And to maybe play a little fortune teller, looking maybe to the end of the year, you haven't quite had time to really, you know, settle in, get your feet in the grass all the way, or the sand, I guess, down there. But being able to plan, what do you think at the end of the 2021-2022 season, heading into the offseason, what is the storyline? What are the points of emphasis? What do the fans want to read about down the road and moving forward going into 2022?
Man, it's so hard to answer that question because, you know, a lot of the fans down here, I mean, they want a clean ship. I mean, I know it's year three of the rebuild, and they're looking for a new coach, looking for a new quarterback, looking for a new GM. It's really going to be interesting to see what happens over the second half of the season. I'm kind of in the mindset that I think that everyone's kind of safer now. I don't think Flores is really on the hot seat the way many others would think, unless the second half of the season just really falls apart. Chris Greer is a little different because he's been here longer. And obviously there's the Watson angle. You have a segment of the Dolphins fan base that kind of is just done with that. They don't want him on the roster, especially with the allegations hanging over his head. But the fact of the matter is the team is still interested in him. So I think that's really going to dominate the headlines, in the early part of the 2022 offseason. And if for some reason there's a coaching change or a GM change, then, I mean, you're looking at a completely different trajectory of this franchise.
Definitely. And I guess without further ado, I guess we can get into a little bit of prediction time for Thursday night. It feels weird to kind of already be jumping into this with a game only having happened a couple days ago, and with it being one of the longest games that I can remember watching in a while. But here we are. It's time to do some predictions, and I guess you can go ahead and let us know what you think is going to happen on Thursday night.
Yeah, so I was a little surprised when I saw that the line was like 7. I think it's gone up to 7.5 or something like that. I do think the game's going to be a little bit closer than most people expect. You know, in Miami, everyone's saying, oh, this is going to be another 59-10, and I don't think it's going to be that bad. The Ravens have started off pretty slow in games, and for as bad as the Dolphins' offense has been, they've surprisingly been one of the better first quarter teams. So I think that the Dolphins' defense is going to win some possessions early on, win some battles early on. This game, it could be a one-score game, you know, late in the third quarter, early in the fourth quarter. But I think that over time, you know, Lamar and just that offense will kind of, you know, be able to do what they usually do. And I'm predicting 28-15 Ravens win.
And they did hang tough against that Bills team a couple weeks ago. They're coming off of a win last week or a couple days ago as well. Last week, geez, such a quick turnaround. But Dan, thank you so much for joining us. It was amazing to have someone that has such a duality of knowledge for these two teams, especially on a quick turnaround. We were blessed to get you on here. Thanks for being a friend of the pod. Please plug yourself, plug your work, your Twitter, you know, where everybody can find your stuff.
Yeah. So if you want to follow me on Twitter, that's Daniel Oyefusi, OYEFUSI. If you want to read my work, if I'm in Baltimore, you still want to read my work on the Dolphins, it's Miami Herald, MiamiHerald.com, and the Miami Herald app.
All right, buddy. Thanks a ton for hopping on, and you have yourself a great rest of your week and enjoy the game, okay?
I'm most definitely. You guys too.
Later. Thanks, Dan.
Yep, see ya.
Gourlami. Gourlami.
Arrivederci.
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 Arrivederci. Arrivederci.